Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about sustainable gardening today to start the show with a couple of guests. One of them, Liza Lightfoot, is president of Avant Gardening and Landscaping. It's a business she started in the Madison area in 1985. Her focus is on sustainable landscapes with site-appropriate plants. Liza, good to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Becky Keelstrup with her as well, the general manager and horticulturist at Avant Gardening. She has a degree in horticulture production from Gateway College and over 25 years. You don't look old enough to have 25 years of experience in the horticulture industry, but Becky Keelstrup, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thanks, Larry.
Well, and what does she specialize in? Well, she looks at things like organic turf and rain gardens. We can talk about that today, too, and no-mow fescue lawns. So, what would you like to know about making your landscape more sustainable? Give us a call with your questions and comments. Number to call 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Liza, let's start with you for a minute. When we talk about sustainable landscaping, and by the way, I'll mention that how I found out about these two is that in my neighborhood, I do my jog, my 3 mile jog in the morning, and I went by one of the homes and I said, oh my goodness, they're doing some landscaping. And the more I looked at it, the better I liked what they were doing. It was just really beautiful. And I was thinking, man, that's a sustainable looking thing to me. And so it didn't take us long to find Liza and Becky at Avant Gardening because they were the landscapers for it. And so when we look at sustainable landscaping, Liza, what does that actually mean to you, and what drew you to this type of landscaping?
Well, I love natural landscapes, you know, all over in Madison, and I do travel quite a bit, so I'm always enjoying natural landscapes, and I love the appearance of a natural landscape in a residential setting. We do mainly residential work. We do some commercial work, but I just love the concept of protecting the our planet, protecting mm-hmm. the landscape. I like the concept that not everything is based on a profit motive, mm-hmm. you know. We're not always driving what we do to the bottom line, you know. I mean, obviously, we do have to be profitable.
You have to make a profit, sure.
You have to make a profit, but, you know, and the other thing is, I think people need to be able to enjoy it and get out in it and experience it. So mm-hmm. it's not something you look at in a passive way. You want to be active in it. So to me, those are kind of the principles of sustainable landscapes that back up the concept. So that's what interests me.
Well, how you go about it certainly interests me as well. Becky, let me turn to you for just a minute here, too. You specialize in particular types of lawns. Let's take lawns first. What are the advantages of lawns like the ones you work on?
I did some research on this several years ago, and it took me a bit of time to really understand the whole concept. And you know, lawns is like our neediest thing on our properties. It's the thing that requires the most amount of work on our part, the most amount of chemicals, water, you know, yeah. all the facets to actually keep it healthy and vigorous the way it needs to be. And after a bit of research, I quickly learned that these chemicals and that you're adding to the lawns to really keep your lawn healthy and green is what's killing all the good biology in the soil, which then in turn doesn't allow the grass to grow well.
Mm-hmm.
So when you lay out all the balances, I mean, it really doesn't, you have to work to try and figure out a way to compromise. And, you know, the lawns that I've been doing for a number of years now have really come a long ways in comparison. And several of these were really hardcore synthetic herbicides, you know, synthetic mm-hmm. fertilizers and things of that nature. So a big part of that is just wanting to give back and not be putting all these chemicals and products on the land. So that's why this all seemed to make complete sense to me.
So you've got that going, and you have some other things that you work on as well. And I guess part of the sustainability thing, a rain garden certainly is a part of a sustainable landscape. Can you work on rain gardens?
Absolutely. We build several rain gardens a year. And it's a very thoughtful technique when you really think about the choices you have today. You know, it used to be an old school landscaping, you'd send everything downhill. Mm-hmm. The person on the bottom was the one who kind of dealt with the problem. But, you know, today it's all about keeping your water on your property and addressing it that way, and then creating an element of beauty. And that's really where the rain gardens have really grown, is now we've developed a very nice plant list that does very mm-hmm. well in these types of environments. And we actually just finished one last week that turned out really, it looks beautiful. I can't wait to see it next year.
Oh, yeah, the plants. And, yeah, I guess probably getting right to the end of that time of the year when you can be putting those plants in, or maybe another few weeks.
A few more weeks, yeah.
A couple more weeks.
A couple more weeks you can do that. Talking with Liza Lightfoot and Becky Keelstrup, who are with Avant Gardening and Landscaping, and certainly as we visit with them about sustainable and appropriate garden design, I hope you'll join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share. Maybe you've got a good photo. If somebody's out there and has some photos of the work these two characters have done, I hope you'll post it. Email it in to us. Let's take a look at it. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. But if you want to phone in, phone us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. So you talked a little about this, Liza, but what do you think about when you design a landscape for a specific client?
Well, I always think about the foundation of the landscape, which is basically the grading and the drainage. That is the most important part. And since I've been in this business, you know, we've changed a lot from sending water to swales down mm-hmm. to the street and to stormwater management receptacles. Now we think about infiltration. So infiltration is the very first thing I think about, is how can we percolate that water down to the water table? So that's number one. Then when I look at a landscape, I look at what can we recycle? Is it plants? Is it paving materials, stone, anything we can recycle that minimizes transportation, bringing stuff in, taking stuff out, and then soil preservation, because, you know, as we all know, soil is one great big microorganism.
Yeah.
And when you disturb the soil, you disturb that microorganism. So any way we can protect that. And then we think about maintenance. How is the maintenance going to work? Is this something that the client can sustain themselves? Or do we need to make it a self-sustaining landscape? And lastly, I would say, how is the site going to evolve? So when designing a landscape, I always like to design landscapes that are going to be beautiful 30, 35 years yeah. from now. And we have some in Madison that I've visited, gone back and seen that look fabulous today. So that we did right at the start of my business. So those are really the fundamental principles I think about when designing. And of course, using native plants and designing site-specific plants that will work in that particular environment.
And there's also the challenge, I guess, in a way, of making it look good right from the start, too, because you're talking about evolution here, but the homeowner and the neighbors probably want it looking pretty good right away.
Absolutely. And, you know, as you probably know, Larry, gardens go through a process. When they first go in, they look one way. 10 years later, some things have died, other things have taken over, and, you know, it's an evolution. So we do think about all that, too.
You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. Are there some simple things that gardeners can do to make their landscape better for the environment? Let's talk about that a little bit. Becky, do you want to chime in here, too?
Sure. I mean, I think it all comes down to plant choices. at the beginning. Mm-hmm. If you're dealing with what you have, then of course you have to deal with what you have. But then think about maybe perhaps instead of having a formal sheared ewe, allowing it to be natural and be feathery and just get in and hand prune a few plant stems out of it. Otherwise, you know, just think about perennials and perennial choices. If you have ones that are a bit more weedier, maybe not look at them as a bit more weedier. Maybe it's really filling space and allowing the bad guys not to invade.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's several different ways you can think about the landscape that you have, but in really trying to be more, you know, the more natural or native approaches, just really thinking about what you're mowing, your emissions, things of that nature as well.
As I mentioned on the show before, I've got rid of the mowing my front lawn by putting in some native plants, mostly, between the sidewalk and the street, and then that small front lawn. But I was able to turn that into all kinds of different flowers that look good pretty much all year long. They add a lot of winter interest because I don't clean them out, and no mowing in that.
Yeah, no, that sounds wonderful. I've seen lots of gardens like that around Madison that are self-sustaining, really.
Yeah, really. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of work to them. Mike in Madison, let's get you involved here. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Mike, are you there? What's on your mind?
Oh, this is Mark.
Oh, Mark. Sorry, Mark.
It's all right. I was calling because of the question about landscaping right up next to buildings. Buildings have serious problems with water infiltration directly into the basements in a lot of homes. And landscaping oftentimes is done such to try and beautify the house, but failing to understand that you don't really want to bring water that close to the house. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What are okay?
That's a very good question. And like I said, it's one of the fundamental things we look at with design. Pitching the grade away from the house is definitely one of the first things I would think of. The other thing I would look at is your guttering, because gutters can actually cause a lot of water to get into the basement. Certainly if they're not clean. Definitely getting a pitch away from the house, and then. And a lot of builders are putting in drain tile around the foundations of houses now, which will help as well.
Yeah. And I can think of my own house. I had a little water problem when I first moved in one corner, and then I went outside and took a look at the downspouts and the outspout, and added about 4 feet to the 3 feet to the length of one, and then my water problem went away.
Yep, I've had the same thing as well. And also maybe not purchasing a house in a low-lying neighborhood that really should never have been built in the first place.
Yeah. Well, here's one that from Rick in Stoughton. He's wondering, if you have a no-mow lawn, how difficult is it to clean up after dogs? Now, there's a practical question for you. Becky, what about that?
Well, it depends on how important you feel it is or necessary to clean up after the dogs, actually, because the no-mow fescue actually grow past it, and it's well hidden. So it's, you know, reasonable to clean up, really no different than a lawn, quite frankly, but it's just a little bit taller.
Just a little bit tall. So no-mow lawns handle that.
They absolutely.
Well, on that note, we are reminding you that our two guests today are Liza Lightfoot and Becky Kielstrup from Avant Gardening and Landscaping in McFarland and Madison areas. Great to have them with us. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our engineer, Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you along today as we talk sustainable and appropriate garden design with our two guests, Liza Lightfoot and Becky Kielstrup, both from Avant Gardening and Landscaping in the McFarland and Madison areas. Great to have them along, and certainly if you have a question or comment, email us at ideas@wpr.org or phone at 1-800-642-1234. Logan emailed to say that when they moved into his parents' house in 1998. It was largely lawn. 20 years later, it's mostly native prairie and trees, thanks to the hard work of his dad.
Excellent. Awesome. Well, that sounds wonderful.
That's fantastic.
And it shows you what you can do if you're willing to put a little time and labor or hire somebody like a McCartney to do the work for you. Your business puts in ponds and water features. What are some things to think about when, or what do you think about when adding water to a landscape? Becky, do you want to, or Liza, do you want to start with that?
Well, I love the idea of attracting wildlife. We have a pond outside of our conference room, and the bird life is phenomenal. We love it, and yeah. We see butterflies, and it's just a great way to attract wildlife.
Yeah. Is it a difficult thing in our climate?
Not at all. I mean, you just have to know there are certain timings that you have to remove the pump to save that. And like we use leaf screens over mm-hmm. ours to help so it doesn't get full of the leaf litter. And then we throw warmer in the winter because we have several fish in our pond.
What size, I'm thinking about an average home here in Madison on the east side of Madison. They're fairly, relatively small. Mm-hmm. Properties maybe 50 feet across or 55 somewhere in that area. Can a pond work in a more limited space?
Absolutely. You know, there are pondless water features as well that are small and would fit into tiny spaces. So yeah, you can have a pond that's anywhere from just a small bubbling rock to a large 12 by 10 pond, you know. I mean, I have a property that's that size, and you could easily fit a nice pond into that size property.
Well, let's go to Ruth in Altoona next. Hi, Ruth. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I have a question, which is mulching. I have a rain garden, and I mulch it. It seems to, be good for the soil. But what I have difficulty with is like when to mulch, because apparently last year I mulched too early and then it became a smorgasbord for whatever needed food, and then but if I wait too long then I'm got snow on the ground and then I'd end up mulching over snow, so I'm trying to figure out how to time the mulching.
And what do you mulch with, by the way?
I chop up mostly maple leaves in our yard and put them
okay.
in.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Becky, you want to comment on that?
Yeah. And that definitely is a problem in our climate because it can be, well, yesterday was 80 degrees. Today now we're, 65. But, as late as possible is what the recommended approach for mulching those gardens are, because what you're doing by adding that mulch layer is once the temperature of the soil cools down, then you mulch that and it helps keep that soil at a more moderate temperature instead of fluctuating so much.
So if you wait until the ground is even frozen?
That's perfectly fine. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So later the better, it sounds like, Ruth.
And on top of snow is not a problem. It really isn't.
Yeah. Does that help, Ruth?
Well, do I mulch over snow?
Well, I probably wouldn't if there was several inches, but if you have just a good dusting or something, that is not going to hurt anything.
Well, and the main thing, not to bury the plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how much would you be putting down, do you think?
2 inches.
A couple of inches.
2 to 3, yeah.
2 to 3 inches.
Yeah.
How's that sound, Ruth?
Yeah, that's typically what I do.
I do have a question for you, though, Ruth. How mature is your rain garden?
Oh, 10 years.
Okay. One thing that I've kind of learned recently is that rain gardens in their maturity do not need mulching as much. Because what happened is you're adding all that organic matter to the space, and it could clog the true pores of the system for drainage. So you just have to be really careful of that. If the garden is functioning fine, then I think you're okay.
Okay, yeah, I do weed it here and there, so I feel like I'm, creating and breaking up the soil a little bit in that process.
Good.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks, Ruth. Appreciate the call. You can join in too, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, let's talk a bit more about cold temperatures. They are probably on the way, aren't they? And how do you prepare a water feature when it comes to that for that winter weather? You talked about the filter, I think you did.
Right, I did, yeah. So probably one of the biggest things is if it's a pond and you have fish, then you have to set a plan. Are you going to take the fish in for the winter? Are you going to add a heater? And if you have streams, the big thing, you have a lot of water loss if you leave them running throughout the winter. So you'll want to basically... What we do is basically turn the pond backwards so that it's not running down the stream anymore. So you're bubbling in the bottom. So it just helps keep the infiltration if you have fish.
Okay.
Keep the moisture or the oxygen levels high.
Yeah. I wonder if more people than not just drain it out for the winter, or is that not the case?
Not by us, no. No. Most of ours have a tremendous amount of fish, so okay. Rather than hauling them into an indoor aquarium, they actually just throw a little pond heater in. You don't have to feed them or anything. You just have to keep an air pocket open for them.
Keep the fish-eating birds out.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely.
Susan in Oregon, let's go to you. Hi, Susan.
Yes, I have a question about what sort of landscaping would help disguise utility boxes and electric meters right next to the foundation outside. I guess there's an 18-inch clearance necessary, but
yeah,
that's what I'm wondering.
You're probably not the only one wondering that question, Susan. Liza, you coming?
Yeah. I can take that one. Well, firstly, Madison Gas and Electric actually has a nice little flyer about that. So if you have access to them, you could ask them for that. But I would not use any shrubbery or any trees, of course. I would use only perennials with shallow rooting systems, nothing too deep, because mostly those utilities are buried about 4 feet down. But I would use grasses are a wonderful solution, and some of the taller perennials, if you can stand that kind of size in front of your house, they really do a great job of disguising boxes. So
yeah,
I think grass.
You got some examples of the tall perennials?
Grass is the miscanthus. But be careful of miscanthus because it can be very aggressive. Mm-hmm. So pick a non-aggressive clumping form. Some of the taller plants would be things like the question is sunshade. How much, you know, we have to pick the right plant for the right place. But you know, a lot of the perennials that get to be like 18 inches, phlox, you know, or some of the taller stilbes if it's a shady spot, hostas of course. But there are so many different choices to come up with.
Yeah, and those boxes are usually, what are they, 3 feet? I'm holding my arm out here. You can't see this on the radio, but probably 3 feet up or so.
Yeah.
So you need, if you're going to cover them, you got to have something that's going to go.
Well, I love the hardy hibiscus for a really much taller plant that gives you really big flowers in the fall, although it's not a native, but it's a lovely plant.
Linda couldn't stay on, but would like information on plants that stay below 8 inches tall, especially as a lawn substitute. Becky?
There's not very many. You look towards the sedum families are very good choices. Some of the catmints stay very small and petite. The creeping phlox is another good option. Unfortunately, under 8 inches is really, really tough.
Yeah.
Ground covers. What about ground covers?
Absolutely.
Pachysandra,
yeah.
But it's not a native. There are some native ground covers that you can try.
What about the one problem I see with no-mow lawns is if you have kids, because kids are going to want to run around on the lawn. Is that an issue? Do you find that to be an issue?
That is an issue. Typically what I've done is pockets of Nomo throughout the property. So we're leaving, you know, small soccer fields or play areas for the kids in the lawns, or maintaining those lawns, and then doing pockets of Nomo kind of on the outer edges where they wouldn't spend as much time.
So you're minimizing the amount of mowing that you have to do.
Correct.
And by the way, just to, this is a total aside. Well, not really a total aside. What do you like for a lawnmower?
Oh.
Do you use, I use an electric.
Yes. Oh, great. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we have a big property out in Avant. It takes 7 hours to mow up.
Oh, my goodness.
So we don't use an electric mower. But I've seen these hydrogen-powered mowers, and we are actually in the line for a mower, and we may be looking into something like that.
A hydrogen one?
Yep. They have a tank behind the seat of the mower, and yeah.
Yes.
I didn't know about hydrogen.
Well, and yeah. I have a client that actually has one of those remote control mowers that you teach it the lay of the land, and you have these wires buried, and it just follows, and it mows as it needs to. It mows a bit every day, and that's an electric mower. So it's quite effective. Mm-hmm. The only problem with that is that it doesn't mow everything in one day. So you never have like a completely finished lawn. Hmm. But the balance is the client doesn't have to mow it, so they're very happy.
Well, it doesn't take me long to mow my lawn anyway, so I don't really worry too much about that part of it. Tell us about some of the clients and things that you're working on.
We've got quite a large backlog of clients we're working on. To be perfectly honest, I'm not doing much design anymore. So we have a couple of landscape designers and an mm-hmm. architect who does most of the work. But a lot of them are residential, larger residential mm-hmm. jobs and some small stuff. Mm-hmm. We just do a wide range of landscape design work.
The one that struck me as I was going through the neighborhood is a fairly small property.
Yep.
But it really looks it really looks nice, and you used some stone, I thought, creatively.
Yep, we did. We love to use natural stone because we consider it to be a more sustainable product than, say, brick pavers, which are processed.
Yeah.
You know, natural stone is, you know, it's mined out of the quarries, but then that's what we get and that's what we use. So we love to use natural stone. Plus, it's permeable.
Yeah, and it seemed to really look nice compared mm-hmm. sometimes, I think, to the manufactured products that you see out there.
Yep. Yeah, and plus you can reuse it over and over again.
Yeah, I had some other friends in another part of the neighborhood. I had some stone in another section, and they were putting in a rain garden and wound up pulling the stone from one area and using it in mm-hmm. another area, which was really... And then they had a few left over, and someone was eager to take those off their hands.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As a matter of fact. Yeah. Lisa in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for taking... My call. I kind of came into the maintenance on this garden midstream here, and it was established a while ago. I don't know that it's gotten a lot of attention. The perennials in it are all self-propagating by one means or another, and they tend to compete with one another. I have names for some of them, but not all. You know, the phlox and the sedum and the asters are recognizable. Some of the others, not so much. But any suggestions as to how to strike a balance and you know, where to cut back on some things and where not to, and when, whether I can be making those adjustments now or to wait until the spring.
Yeah. So this is a new property for you, Lisa?
Well, it is for me, but the garden's been there for
a while. Yeah, been there for a long time, but new for you. Okay. Well, Becky, have you got some advice on that?
Yeah. I you know, in gardens that are fairly established, typically what I see is there's usually one or two perennials that are the problem child. And for me, I would tackle that plant or two and really start you know, just selectively removing it in certain locations. The other thing you can do in managing these perennials, I don't know how extensive the gardens are, is you can deadhead them after flower, not allow them to go to seed. That will help tremendously as well.
Yeah, that makes sense. Does that help, Lisa?
Yeah, I think so. There's one. I think it's called a Veronica. And it propagates through the roots, and it's really become a dominant plant. And I hope to rein it in a little bit. But yeah, that does help.
Yeah.
Well, and then another thing, to replace the open spaces with non-rhizomatous plants, use plants with more of a clumping habit.
That makes sense too. Does that help, Lisa?
It does. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Parker emailed to say the town he lives in has a rule that you can't have a fence in your front yard. What would be a good plant for privacy in that kind of situation?
Well, there are lots and lots of choices. Again, is it sunny? Is it shady? So much depends on the actual location and what kind of microclimate you have. But if you really want privacy, I mean, I love the evergreens. You know, arborvitaes, people often say to me they're not so thrilled about arborvitaes, but they can be the right plant for, especially for screening. Some of the larger shrubs like viburnums are beautiful. Dogwood is a very fast growing screening plant that works well and has the nice colored stems in the winter. Sometimes a combination of evergreens and deciduous shrubs. I love the hydrangeas. The hydrangeas, the big woody hydrangeas are great for screening. So hopefully that gives you a few ideas.
I'm thinking about him, and he says it's in his front yard, and you can't have a fence in the front yard. So I'm wondering if he wants something that serves the purpose of a fence but is not necessarily something that's going to screen the front of the house.
Are you thinking of something that's more open?
Or? I was thinking that he wants something that'll keep the dogs off his lawn. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm, as I look at the what he's written here.
I like the grasses for that. The ornamental grasses can be quite effective in creating kind of a tighter barrier. The only problem is they do look kind of odd in a solid line. So you do have to vary it with like a lot of the shrubs and evergreens that Liza had mentioned.
And rugosa roses, they're thorny, but they're beautiful. They have fragrant flowers. Mm-hmm. Those can be nice to add in.
And they're not going to get so high that they're going to keep people out and dogs out.
Yep, definitely. Yeah.
Probably, if I'm reading Parker correctly here, it's probably... My guess is it may be a dog issue, or it may be the neighbor who walks his dog and the dog goes on his lawn every morning.
Yes,
That sort of thing. Well, I tell you what, we've got sort of winding up here, but I wanted to bring up that you've done a lot of work in this, again, a little off our topic in some ways, but you've done a lot of work in South Africa, Liza. Talk about a little about that.
Sure. Well, you know, I am originally from South Africa, and I've been here for over 40 years. And as I've gotten older and looking towards semi-retirement, I've been spending a lot more time in South Africa with a nonprofit organization that some friends of mine and I founded many years ago called KidLinks. Mm-hmm. And we work mainly on projects that support children, especially children with who've come from HIV families or are HIV positive, HIV and AIDS, and very disadvantaged children. So I've been working on designing and building playgrounds and food gardens, urban food gardens. So that's become a real passion of mine lately.
It sounds wonderful. And has it informed your own work here?
Well, in some ways. We don't do playgrounds, but I've become very, very interested in designing playgrounds for kids, you know, natural playgrounds and playgrounds that help with early childhood development. So, you know, anytime something like that comes up, I'm and I hear that it is a client, I'm like, I want to be in on it. So,
well, that sounds absolutely wonderful. I want to thank you both very much for coming by and being with us today. I've learned a few things, and I bet our listeners have too. I hope we can do this again at some point.
Well, thank you.
Thank you
very much, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, thank you.
Liza Lightfoot and Becky Kielstrup. Liza is the president of Avant Gardening and Landscaping. And you, by the way, you have, is there a website or a place where people can go to find out more about Avant Gardening?
Absolutely. It's www.avantgardening.com.
Avantgardening.com. I knew
A-V-A-N-T.
That. Yeah, that's, I think, how we found you in the first place.
Great.
So, Liza's president of Avant, and Becky Kielstrup has been there a long time, general manager, horticulturist at Avant Gardening as well. Fun to have them with us, and certainly thank them for being around, and thank you for listening in. And I hope you stay listening, because there's an author... Had on the program one other time, Thor Hansen's his name, and he's got a new book out. It's called Buzz, The Nature and Necessity of Bees. I found it fascinating, and I think you will as well. That next, here on the Ideas Network.